Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I'm Carol Daniel, KMOX News Time 305.
Oh, getting kind of sick of the weather, Carol.
I know it's
winter and everything, but...
I'm sick of winter.
Right.
Like sunshine and 60 degrees or 70 is weather. But well, sick of winter weather, not just weather.
My sister was in town from Chicago over the weekend. She has a daughter. My niece goes to SLU, and she was now, look, she's from Chicago, so it's not like they have glorious weather up there during the winter. But she commented how gray it was, you know, because the sun last week, it came out a little bit.
Right.
That's what really does, and we've
That's
talked
does,
about the
yeah.
whole sad Se- thing,
seasonal
right?
Seasonal affective disorder.
Yeah. Because I do think it's real.
It is. Oh, it's very real. I go around my house. I turn on all the lights. Because my husband has a little bit of that. Being from
But is
St.
that
Croix,
supposed to work, though?
It
like
is.
Like, the indoor lighting is supposed to work?
Yeah, just bright light is supposed to help you. Just light. Light in general. So that's what I do for him. That's what I do for him.
You don't walk around with a big spotlight or something like that. Like, he's being interrogated, right?
You would think that just my presence and my smile
would energize him.
Light to lift his mood, but it is not.
All right, we'll talk to you again at 3:30 this afternoon. We're here for Total Information PM as well. One of the stories that we've been covering throughout the day is being reported by our own Kevin Killeen, who has joined me in the studio, because when you have allegations of a communist being on the Board of Aldermen for the city of St. Louis, or trying to be on the Board of Aldermen, that piques my interest. And Kevin was telling me about this on Friday, and you have this story for this morning. How are you?
I am well. And
are you pulling all your audio?
You know what I like about this story? Usually when I cover the Board of Aldermen, unless you live in the city, you say, so what? But this is one of those Board of Aldermen stories that I think can be of interest to anybody, because in the whole history of this city, I don't think we've ever had this situation where somebody who is a communist is running for the Board of Aldermen. What he's saying about his opponent is interesting, too. Here's the initial he said, she said.
Hang on one second, because I want to do a little test. Give me a little test audio, because the way that this is getting into the weeds for the listeners, but the way that my board is set up right now might not match up with that computer. But go ahead. See if that works.
All right, I'm running a little audio here. Can you hear that?
No, I can't.
All right, let me go over here. Hold on.
Sorry. I don't even need to get into it with the listeners, but it's just one of those things that we... Now I got to change it back, Kevin. Oh, my goodness.
All right, anyway...
Wait a second. No, wait a second.
This is the Bevo Mill area.
Hang on.
The
you
salt
can't,
of the
you
earth.
Can't do this yet, because now I think I've taken it back to the other direction. Let's see. This is what happens on a holiday when you don't have regular producers here. You get really, really good quality radio. You want to try this now? Let's try that.
Okay, here we go.
Is it running?
Here we go. Here's the cut.
He's running as a Democrat, but he's affiliated with the Communist Party USA.
I'm more of a Democrat than the current older person, who I would liken to, because of her political stances, a member of the Republican Party.
That is Alderwoman Carol Howard of the 14th Ward. She's a Democrat, and she is a longtime incumbent, being challenged by Tony Pasanofsky. He's a 41-year-old with a career in organized labor. He's worked for the Service Employees International Union as an activist for the Workers' Education Society. And he is affiliated with the Communist Party USA, but he didn't like to dwell on that.
What? Well, I'm a lifelong Democrat. I've only ever voted Democratic, and I've only ever supported Democratic candidates.
Are you affiliated with the Communist Party USA?
I'm a member of a lot of different organizations.
How hard is that to answer? Comrade, did you say, hey, comrade, how hard is that to answer?
No, I wanted to be respectful, because here's the thing. If you want to be a communist and run in the St. Louis Board of Aldermen, well, under our great system, you should be able to do that, right? It's just a matter of truth and labeling. And his challenger wonders if he is being upfront with the voters. Here's what Carol Howard says.
My fear is that the voters might be deceived by that. If you're running as a Democrat and you have a Communist Party affiliation.
And he slaps right back at her. He says, "You are a Republican in Democrats' clothing. You voted no on the city's minimum wage. You haven't been tough enough on a public vote for airport privatization." But I wanted to go back to with Tony. I said, "Tony, you know, when you go door to door and you ring those doorbells, are you telling the people your whole resume?"
When you go door to door, do you feel like you have an obligation to tell voters your whole resume so that it doesn't look like you're trying to conceal your affiliation with the Communist Party USA?
I think there's nothing to conceal. I think that people are proud.
Do you mention it, though, when you go door to door? "I'm a Democrat, and I'm also affiliated with the Communist Party USA."
I'm a Democrat. I'm running as a Democrat. That is the main issue that voters in Ward 14 are concerned about.
And initially,
he he sounds just like every other politician. I don't know if you can criticize him there. And by the way, here's something I would wonder aloud is, why would you hide the commie bona fides if that's working for AOC and the rest of the, you know, the socialists in the party? I don't know. You may want to wear that as a badge of honor if your comrade Pestalozzi, what is his name? Is that close?
No, it is. Pesanovsky.
That was it.
P-E-C.
Well, there was a ski on the end, right, because of the communist
affiliation. Now, you raise a good point. There are already a handful of progressive Democrats in the Board of Aldermen, and one of them, Megan Green, identifies herself as a Democratic Socialist, and she's running to run the whole show.
Right, for board president.
And after Bernie Sanders, there's a great appeal among young people of the idea that... You know,
why run from it? Embrace it, comrade. That's what I would have said to him. That would have been my advice. But I know you're a reporter. You're not offering advice. You're just bringing this story to the people of St. Louis, Kevin, and we appreciate it.
Yeah, and can I play? Are we out of time?
Oh, you can play whatever you want. It's a holiday. You want to take over the hour? Come on in here. I'll let you go.
Let's do traffic. just to give perspective, one last thought is, you know, this is the first time this has ever happened in the St. Louis Board of Aldermen that I know of, but there was a visiting... expert on socialism and politics. He's an opponent of communism in American politics, Marion Smith. He's executive director of the Victims of Communism Memorial Fund in D.C., and he says this: what's happening here is a trend all around.
We are seeing a rise of activities of Communist Party and socialist movement organizations around the country, and they are becoming very active at the grassroots and the local level of politics.
Are communists running for city councils and boards of aldermen in other cities?
We have seen examples of that, yes.
So it's not just here, and maybe I was speculating, maybe this is a test case where they said, let's see if Mr. Pesanovsky, who is all over the internet, if you Google Tony Pesanovsky, Communist Party USA, you get pages and pages on him. Maybe they're just seeing, do the voters have an appetite for this? Is this something that is palatable?
Well, to your point, though, it would seem that you would not want to run and hide from this. If it's pretty easy to find out the affiliation, why not just tell the voters that? So. I'm not sure why he would have an issue with that, but we'll see how that race turns out.
Yeah.
Typically, the incumbent's pretty favored in a Board of Aldermen seat, aren't they? I mean, it's
you never know. I mean, there's
surprises.
Been some upsets.
Yeah.
And in this race, there's only about 3,000 voters who are expected to participate.
Right. Well,
and
it's about turnout.
Tony Pesanovsky is a big, his forte is registering voters. I mean, that's all the progressive Democrats before him have had big get-out-the-vote drives. That's what they know how to do.
Interesting. Kevin Killeen from the newsroom. Keep us posted on that. I like that. Good reporting from Kevin earlier today on KMWX in a story that we are covering. I want to get the Andy McCabe stuff in here before we get to the break because I've been hanging on to this audio. So, you know, it's hard for me to say exactly what I think of what Andrew McCabe said last night to Scott Pelley on 60 Minutes because ordinarily, maybe I'd want to give it a little... legitimacy, but I think his credibility has been dinged in several circles. So it's hard to tell whether or not he's telling the truth. Plus, he's got a book out tomorrow. And I said this last week. I love 60 Minutes. I've liked what they've done over the years. I appreciate good investigative reporting. I don't think it's all good on 60 Minutes, but oftentimes, and I watch the show every week, record it, it is excellent. And I think it's important to have journalism of that nature. But I think they fail when they do these big stories that are only based on the release of a book and they get the exclusive commitment because they're the biggest news show in the country. So when you see these things roll out, 60 Minutes gets it first. I don't know if he was on the Today Show this morning or he'll be on the Today Show tomorrow, but that's typically how it works. So this is going to the issue of Rod Rosenstein wearing a wire. That's been the allegation.
I can't describe to you accurately enough the pressure and the chaos that Rod and I were trying to operate under at that time. It was incredibly turbulent, incredibly stressful, and it was clear to me that that stress was impacting the Deputy Attorney General. We talked about why the president had insisted on firing the director and whether or not he was thinking about the Russia investigation and did that impact his decision. And in the context of that conversation, the Deputy Attorney General offered to wear a wire into the White House.
Now, keep in mind, he's referring to the previous FBI director, Jim Comey. Jim Comey gets fired. Andrew McCabe comes in. He replaces him. The deputy AG is Rod Rosenstein.
He said, I never get searched when I go into the White House. I could easily wear a recording device. They wouldn't know it was there. Now, he was not joking. He was absolutely serious. And in fact, he brought it up in the next meeting we had. I never actually considered taking him up on the offer. I did discuss it with my general counsel and my leadership team back at the FBI after he brought it up the first time.
Well, that would be a pretty big story, right? But some of the answers he gives here are a little confusing. But let me get to the 25th Amendment issue here. So you got the wire allegation, Rosenstein, by the way, says all this stuff did not happen. And then you have the issue of the 25th Amendment, whether or not the president can be removed from office based on him not being able to perform the position.
A discussion of the 25th Amendment was simply Rod raised the issue and discussed it with me in the context of thinking about how many other cabinet officials might support such an effort. I didn't have much to contribute, to be perfectly honest, in that conversation, so I listened to what he had to say. But to be fair, it was an unbelievably stressful time. I can't even describe for you how many things must have been coursing through the Deputy Attorney General's mind at that point.
So, you know, and I believe that, but this is weird to me. I mean, you would think that something of that nature, that's that big, somebody's not telling the truth here. And is the truth sometimes in the middle? Sure. But if you're in a meeting like that with the Deputy AG and you're the interim FBI director and someone mentions removing the president via the 25th Amendment, I would think that would stick out pretty obviously, as far as, well, how did he ask that question?
How did he bring up the idea of the 25th Amendment to you?
Honestly, I don't remember. It was just another kind of topic that he jumped to in the midst of a wide-ranging conversation.
Seriously? Just another topic?
Yeah.
Did you counsel him on that?
I didn't. I mean, he was discussing other cabinet members and whether or not people would support such an idea, whether or not other cabinet members would shared his belief that the president was really concerned.
I think, you know, even Pelley sort of scoffed there because he found it hard to believe that, you know, McCabe wouldn't remember that. Anyway, that's the latest on that. Again, someone's not telling the truth. 318.
The issues are there. Talk about them with Mark Reardon on KMOX.
All right, we're going to talk a little movies this afternoon with Mary McNamara, who went to the University of Missouri. She's been a guest on my show before. She is a film critic for the LA Times, wrote a couple of columns recently that caught my attention, and I thought we'd talk some movies with you, Mary. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing okay for February in St. Louis. Although the last time, you know, I was in LA for the Critics' Choice Awards about a month ago. It was the worst weather I think I'd ever experienced out there. Just gray and cloudy and cold, and wasn't a whole lot better than here.
It's been raining a lot out here, and we're very grateful, but it's like we're not used to it, and it's, you know, it's cold here when it's in the 40s, so it's been cold here.
And it doesn't take a whole lot of rain to lead to mudslides, does it?
I think everything's been pretty good so far. I know that there were some earlier, but the rain has been steady. It's when you get like the no rain, and then it, you know, just this huge downpour, but it's just been kind of steady lately. So it's good. The snowpack is rising, and we're all very excited about the snowpack.
So I want to talk to you about the comment you wrote last week about when picking Oscar's best picture, shouldn't you vote for one you'd watch again? Because I found that very intriguing, and I have some opinions on that. But did I see over the weekend that this whole kerfuffle about handing out some of the awards during the commercial breaks, they've reversed course on that?
They have reversed course on that. We've had a lot of reversals lately with the Academy.
Yes, we have.
Yes, the branches that were going to be impacted, which was cinematography, film editing, live action short, and hair and makeup, all, you know, protested, talked to the Academy, and convinced them that this was not a great idea. And so the ceremony will go as forward as it has gone forward for however many years.
Who's running the Academy? Because everything they do, they seemingly have to flip around. And I mean, whether it's this, and I think this is part of what your column was about last week. You know, you had this most popular film category trying to perhaps shine a light on some of the movies that do really well at the box office that typically get ignored at awards time. But everything they do, they can't find a host. I guess there's not going to be a host this Sunday, which I'm okay with. But have they done anything right?
Well, I don't know whether it's a question of right or wrong. They're trying some new things. And, you know, what I find kind of hilarious is everybody complains about the show every year. It's too long. It's too boring. It's just a bunch of acceptance speeches, and some people haven't even bothered to write good speeches. But if you try to change it in any way, everybody's like, no, it's not the
That's
same.
Right, yeah.
We hate it, but it needs to stay exactly the same. So, I mean, that is, you know, that's the conundrum, because this is a television show. It's a live television show. ABC has paid a lot of money to have it, and they want to have better ratings. And people want it to not run 3 hours and 50 minutes, as it has done pretty regularly. The new producers were tasked with trying to bring it in at 3 hours. They're not going to be able to do it now. I don't know exactly how much time they would have saved with giving these four awards out during the commercial, but it's sort of like it's the spirit of the thing, which is we don't want it changed, even though it drives us crazy every year.
Well, and I think part of the issue is let's run down the Best Picture nominees, because this will illustrate the point. You have a mix here, and this is maybe a little unusual. Not altogether, though, where you have some films that are big box office favorites or winners. Black Panther, Bohemian Rhapsody did very well. Green Book did very well. I don't know if it's on par with the other two, and then A Star Is Born. But yeah, Black Klansman didn't make as much money. Roma, I can't remember how Vice did. And they're mixed in with these more artsy films. And I think typically at Oscar time, people who like to go to the movies, my mom is a good example of this, she gets to the Oscars and she's saying, well, wait a second, I haven't seen any of these, right? And then maybe they do go see things that those of us who are critics heap praise on. I've met a lot of stiff resistance, for example, to The Favorite, which was my number one film of the year. I thought it was outstanding, but I'm finding a lot of people did not like that one at all, Mary.
Right. Well, I mean, you know, the idea of picking a best picture, you know, you have to take that with a grain of salt just to begin with. But this year's list actually is more diverse in terms of type of movie than I've seen since they, added five extra slots. I mean, it used to just be five. And then when Dark Knight was not nominated for best picture, they decided, okay, well, we're going to give 10 nominees to best picture so that we can include some of these big pictures, they'll at least get nominations. That is not what happened. If you look at like the nomination list after they doubled the nominees, it was just mostly more smaller films. I mean, this is the first time I think, I checked this, that you have basically three big box office hits in the category of Best Picture. So that's kind of unusual. And I think personally, this is just me guessing, it was a reaction to when they floated the notion of the popular Oscar, because that was, you know, that was the Academy's way of saying, if you're not going to nominate any of these big movies, we're going to have to give it its own category. And the voters were like, okay, we'll nominate some of them because we don't want to do that.
Yeah, and see, this is where I would run into the problem. And I'm of the firm opinion that there are three of these films that should have never been nominated for Best Picture, because they're not good enough in any year to be nominated as Best Picture. Bohemian Rhapsody would lead the way on that. I like Black Panther. I thought it was a fine movie. Doesn't belong in this category. I'd say Vice doesn't belong. Now, look, I have my opinion. You have your opinion.
No, 9 yards of what? No. Black Panther, the best movie of the year. It was amazing.
Okay. See, this is where you have to. I thought it was a very, very good movie. I liked it, but when it comes to maybe that added layer that should be best picture, I think it got a lot of attention because of the cultural reasons outside of maybe how good the movie was compared to other, even other comic book movies. But again, I'm probably in the minority on that one.
Well, I mean, it's, you know, that's why you have 10 nominees. I would take A Star Is Born off because I did not like that movie. I think they just keep remaking it and I don't know why, but you know, but so that's why, I mean, that's what the conversation is supposed to be about. It's supposed to be, you know, well, let's argue the merits of all of these various movies and why we like them and why we didn't. And, you know, when it comes down to it, like I said, best movie, how do you judge that? So I sort of came up with, well, I would like a best picture should be something that you would watch again, conceivably, you know, that you would want to watch again at some point in your life. And I do feel like there have been a couple that have one best picture that I don't think people have watched multiple times.
Well, I think you're right about that. And you asked this question. This is where I'm weird because I think I can answer yes on all these, but I'm a film critic. You said, how many of us who are not film critics have sat through repeat performances of Birdman, The Artist, The Departed, Slumdog Millionaire? I've actually seen that many times. Crash, Argo, The Silence of the Lambs. I think certainly people would sit through that. Argo, maybe. But to your point, now here this brings us full circle to this week's awards. The thing that when I saw Roma, beautiful piece of cinema, but I said to the screening rep here in St. Louis, he said, we walked out, what do you think? I said, oh, it's pretty, you know, it's a decent movie from an artistic standpoint, but I don't think I could ever sit through it again.
Well, yes, exactly. But then it, you know, so that and my piece also was like, what are we saying when we say best? Are we saying best, you know, moved the most number of people the most, or are we saying it sort of pushes the envelope on what we consider, you know, an important topic?
Yeah.
I mean, the thing that you could argue with Roma is that this is a story that we've never seen before in a movie. This is a story that focuses on a kind of person, a young woman who's a maid in Mexico who's going through, like, you know, just a sort of not ordinary, but, you know, it's dramatic.
Unique circumstances, right. Oh, and then there's no doubt the way that Alfonso Cuarón did that movie was brilliant as well. Look, I'm out of time. What would you vote for if you were voting for Best Picture this weekend? What would you vote for?
It would be a tough one for me. I would say either Black Panther or Black Klansman. I liked both of those movies very much.
And I would say The Favorite. So this is why you have differences, and Roma's probably going to win.
Really?
So.
As Best Picture with that ending? Are you kidding me? With the bunny rabbits? No.
Loved it. Loved it, Mary.
Hate it.
We
yeah,
should
see,
we should bet. We don't have the same taste.
Director,
so
that's a male director making a movie about women. Let's cut to the bunny rabbits.
We should battle like this in the future. This is fun. Because, and by the way, I think I've met more people that are in the camp on The Favorite than you are, as opposed to me. But we'll chat again.
In The Favorite. I want to go on record. I loved all the performances in The Favorite.
Yeah,
I
hope Rachel Weisz wins this weekend, actually. Mary McNamara from the LA Times. I appreciate it. Thank you.
All right,
take care. And she went to Mizzou as well, a little local connection. 332, donate your car to Goodwill at mersgoodwill.org and get a tax deduction. Towing is free. This is the theme from Avenue Q. And maybe the only part I can play on the radio that's not going to get me fired or fined by the FCC. And I mention it because the Tony Award-winning Avenue Q is extending its run at the Playhouse at Westport Plaza, and Paul Emery is in the studio, the president of Emery Entertainment. He runs the Playhouse and is producing this show. And Kevin O'Brien has puppets on his hands right now, and he's going to maybe even do some of the voices that are associated with this show. Hey, guys, how are you? Welcome to KMOX on this President's Day.
Great to be here.
Hello.
Hi, Paul. How are you?
I'm doing terrific.
Give me the details first, and we'll get into the show and what Kevin does. But on the extension here, that was announced just this morning, right?
Just this morning, yeah. We're extending for two more weeks, and it'll put us into March 17th will be our final show. But it's been going very well. We were a six-week run, and we got with the cast, and everybody's up for, you know, doing a couple more weeks. So we went, let's do it. And we've had a great response to the show.
So, and I haven't seen it yet. I've wanted to, and I feel badly that I haven't, but I never even saw it, you know, when it came through on Broadway or at the Fox. But how do you do, you know, one of the things that is great about Westport Plaza and the Playhouse is the intimacy of that. But that's a pretty small stage to do a show like this, isn't it?
Well, it is, but I have to tell you, I actually think that it's more conducive for the show than a bigger theater. I saw the show recently last year at the New World Stages in New York, and that's a good-sized theater. And you lose a lot of the intimacy and the facial expressions off the actors that are real critical with that, you know, interchange with the puppets.
Yeah, I think people who, if you see a show at the Fox, which I love the Fox and I love Steeple Theater, but I was in New York over the summer and saw a couple of Broadway shows, hadn't been for a while. For people who haven't been to Broadway, those theaters are all very, I mean, there's a couple that are a little bit bigger, but they're very intimate, which is one of the reasons they're so popular. I think you can feel that energy from the folks on stage and vice versa.
I think that's very true. A lot of the Broadway theaters are smaller than you expect. We all expect to go in and see big giant theaters there. They aren't. And intimacy is a big part of great theater.
Well, know? Kevin, tell me about your role. Where are you from, by the way?
I'm from here. I'm from St. Louis.
Oh, you're a St. Louis guy.
Grew up in
awesome.
South County, yeah. I'm from here. I play Nikki, Trekkie Monster, a bad idea bear, a moving box, and a guy named Ricky. So I'm all over the place.
Multiple
in this
roles.
Show.
Let's back it up just.
He's
a little
also
bit.
An usher. I might. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah. Let's back up just a little bit for those uninitiated. And I remember a little bit about the show, just talking about it in the past. But since I haven't seen it, what is this show about? Avenue Q. I think it was always sort of compared to like maybe an R-rated Sesame Street or something like that. Is that fair?
That's a fair comparison. You know, it's real life people and puppets just. Like that show that shall not be named. And it follows one puppet named Princeton mostly, and he's on his search to find his purpose shortly after graduating college. And it's about the people he meets and what he is doing on his journey to find that. And he meets Kate Monster, and they may or may not be a romantic interest. And she's got dreams of her own, but she's dealing with, you know, her student loans and everything. Just like... It's puppets, but dealing with actual issues and very funny.
So, you ticked them all off, but how many roles?
I play five.
Five roles.
Mostly three.
And you have two puppets on your arms right now. Can we get an example of some of you go back and forth at the same time with two characters on stage, too?
Not often for me. There's another actress in the show, Jen Thebe, who is incredible at going back and forth. She has entire scenes with herself. With the two puppets on
stage. That's got to be confusing, right?
I can't believe how she does it. But luckily, I don't have to deal with that too often. There are times when one of my characters will be across the stage and I'm voicing the character, but I'm not also controlling the puppet. But, you know, I've got Nikki here. He's got a roommate, Rod, who has some inner demons to deal with, and he deals with that throughout the show. And Trekkie Monster is a very singular-minded man who loves the internet. And I think that's about all I can say about that.
Yeah, there again, this is where I might get fired or fined by the FCC, right?
right, exactly.
But there are, you know, it's really, really cutting-edge humor. But there is, we should point out, there's vulgarity and, you know, sexual innuendo and all those things that adults... perhaps might laugh at, but don't bring the kids. Is that what would be their cutoff, Paul, for this or not?
Well, you know, definitely you do not want to bring the kids to this show. And I, you know, I have a son who's in college, and I would bring him. But high school, yeah, I think actually, you know, you could probably get away with the
high. Right?
You do.
Right?
You need to know your kids. I call it a PG-13 with a stretch, you know, because it's very vulgar. And I don't have a problem with advertising
I'm a fan of profanity, and I wish I could use it without getting fired. Right?
Well, the FCC cannot fire you, but I know they can fine you, so we'll figure that out.
Right. Believe me, my bosses would beat them to the punch anyway. Sure.
But, we like that out at the Playhouse. We like cutting-edge shows. I mean, you know, you can get all the good, hearty Broadway you want in this town, but you want some shows that are willing to push the edge.
I agree.
And, you know, I was told that the St. Louis audience is very conservative here, and I want to say that's probably not as true as people think it is.
I think it's as true as it once
used to be. I think there are a lot of folks out there like, you know, give me something with a little more flavor. Yeah. And
I have seen people at the Fox, though, who are subscription holders that see the opening night of a show and then walk out.
Get out.
Maybe you should
do your
homework on that, right?
No, I've taken their tickets from them and walked back in, so it's been no problem for me. But
it doesn't seem like we've come across that at our show. Actually, for people who are uninitiated to Avenue Q, it's actually been interesting to see the reactions that we get from the more shocking moments from people who don't know that they're coming, and it's they never seem negative.
Can you give me an example of that without getting into territory that would get me fined or not?
there's full puppet nudity.
Okay.
And that's all I can say about
that. I'm comfortable with that.
You know, and when that happens, it's quite shocking to some people.
Right.
And our crew took it up a few notches even from the Broadway show. And we wanted to. We deliberately said, let's just take this over the top. You know, if there's a line to cross, let's dive over it.
Do it. I like that.
We did. And we have a great cast that just does it extremely well that the audience doesn't even realize to what level we've taken it. But it's hearty. It's very big. And I would say, you know, you got to really be very, very, very conservative to get out and walk out of this one. But
and we can get away with a lot more because there are puppets on our hands.
Yeah, right. Exactly. So, there's some cover there.
It deflects. Exactly. It totally deflects.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, that's cool. Well, 2 more weeks just announced today for tickets. Best way to go is the website.
MetroTix.com.
Is Avenue Q still playing on Broadway?
Yes, but it closes after 15 years. It's closing this April.
It was 15 years.
15 years it's run.
Did not know that.
Which is quite a phenomena in and of itself.
Yeah, I mean, some of those shows that have had those extended runs, it really is kind of amazing.
Yep.
Now you have what I guess King Kong is starting and some bigger shows for this year that I'm kind of curious about, too.
Yep.
I went and saw our St. Louis guy, Norbert Leo Butz, in My Fair Lady last year. With that revival, he's a 2-time Tony Award winner.
Yep.
Give him a little love here from St. Louis.
Absolutely.
He was my date for Springsteen on Broadway. I took Norbert to Springsteen on Broadway. I didn't know him at all. I had interviewed him, and I knew his brother, and I needed a last-minute person because the tickets came up very quickly last year. So on a whim, I texted him and said, hey, dude, I know we don't really know each other, but he had mentioned in the interview a couple of months before that he was interested. He was a Springsteen fan. So he must have done an FBI background check on me quickly or whatever, and he said yes. So when he said, how much do I owe you for the ticket? I said, you know what? You're going to be in My Fair Lady. We're just going to trade that. I took my son. We saw a couple of shows, Kinky Boots and My Fair Lady last August, which was fun.
Excellent.
So it was cool. But this is a great opportunity for those people in St. Louis to see really intimate, funny, raunchy, politically incorrect humor, Avenue Q, and you can get tickets right now for the extended run. Paul, what else you guys got coming this spring? You want to throw a plug in for that?
Well, we're hoping to keep extending this if we could.
Yeah, well, you don't need to have anything booked,
you know,
right?
We have Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus Live coming in May, and a couple other small shows. But we've kind of left the calendar open, hoping that we could keep doing this. So you never know.
All right, keep us posted on the puppets. Thanks, guys, for coming in.
Thanks
here.
For having
Kevin
us
O'Brien,
in.
Paul Emery.
Thank
we
you.
Have an audio cut of the day coming up. Oh, and I should also mention, here's what's on tap, sponsored by Midwest Money. Steve Templeton in the next hour. We have more weather moving in tomorrow. We'll get updated. All right, we have an audio cut of the day coming up here, then Total Information PM. A couple other stories that I wanted to mention. This was an interesting... Oh, I did want to mention Liawatha here, Elizabeth Warren, who tweeted over the weekend, back when I was a kid, a minimum wage job could support a family of three. Today, a full-time minimum wage job in America won't keep a mama and a baby out of poverty. Our movement is about making real fundamental changes to fix this. How old is Elizabeth Warren? Let's just do a little math here on this, and some of you might know where I'm going. I wish I could just Google Liawatha, but I don't think it'll come up as that. Maybe it will. Let's see. Elizabeth Warren is 69 years old. So let's say when she was a kid... Let's go back to, what are you going to say, 55 years ago? If we go back to 55 years, I got to do some quick math here. What is it, 2019? I'm not good at math, but let's just say we'll go back to 19. You know what? Let's do 1965, the year that I was born. And she would have been, you know, essentially in her, I think in her teens at that time. Let's do minimum wage in 1965. And now, obviously, you have cost of living differences. The minimum wage in 1965 was $1.25. So in before that, it was a dollar, right? $1.15. Then it ramped up to $1.25. Do you really believe, here's another lie from Liawatha, do you believe that when Elizabeth Warren was a kid, a minimum wage job could support a family of three when it was $1.25 an hour? Liawatha is at it again.
Playback ready.
Now, the audio cut of the day.
You know, somebody tweeted this out over the weekend, and I wish I could identify who did it, but I certainly remember this case. Remember when you had this kid up in the Chicago area who was mentally challenged, and there were a bunch of African-American kids that kidnapped that person, tied him up for 5 hours, beat people? It was all live on Facebook, and they screamed F Trump and F white people as, you know, they beat him. That was actually a hate crime. That was a real hate crime. And it was covered, barely covered, by the media. Now you have the Jesse Smollett case, which was allegedly a hate crime. But now what we know is none of the things that he said were virtually true. None of it was true. So Kamala Harris, who tweeted about this with the other Democrat presidential hopefuls about horrific nature of this crime, was asked about this today.
Which tweet? What tweet?
About saying that it is a modern day lynching that, sorry. Jesse Smollett.
Yeah, that's about what you're going to hear from Kamala. Here it is. Yeah, she doesn't know how to answer that one, which I think is very interesting. So that's our audio cut of the day, and you're hearing a lot of that from Cory Booker and the rest of the Democratic presidential hopefuls who pounced without any information on the lies that Jesse Smollett told. Total Information PM is coming up.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.